Israeli forces kill and injure nearly 90 civilians waiting for aid in northern Gaza as regime of genocide enters its 160th day. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad dismisses a U.S. plan to build an aid port off Gaza's coast as misleading measure aimed at buying time for Israel. And leader of Hezbollah says Israel is paying a high price in its war with resistance in Gaza and Lebanon while trying to hide its losses. Our top story, Israel's genocidal war in Gaza is now in its 160th day, with the regime pounding the blockaded territory with more airstrikes and artillery fire. Israel's latest strike hit an UNRWA aid distribution center in southern city of Rafah, leaving five Palestinians dead. Israeli forces also opened fire on a group of Palestinians waiting for aid in northern Gaza, killing at least six people and injuring over 80 others. A regime air raid targeting a home in the Jabalia refugee camp killed at least one civilian and left several others injured. In Rafah, two civilians were killed and others injured after Israeli forces bombed their vehicle. The Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 31,300 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have so far been killed in Israel's campaign of genocide since early October. Over 73,000 others have been injured. And joining us earlier for an update from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah was Moti Abu Musabe.
The Israeli warplanes attacked a group of the Palestinian civilians waiting for the humanitarian aid before the gate of a distribution center belongs to the UNRWA in Rafah City. At least six Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over that attack, while dozens were injured. Previously, at least two civilian cars were destroyed and attacked by the Israeli warplanes in Rafah City. Three Palestinian civilians were killed as a result of those attacks. In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, at least 17 dead bodies of the Palestinian civilians actually were extracted from the rubble of those destroyed houses, particularly in neighborhood in Hamad neighborhood, located in the western part of Khan Yunis city. It's worth mentioning that Hamad neighborhood has been under heavy bombardments and attacks for roughly three consecutive weeks, and these attacks are still underway till this moment. More destruction unfolded after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from several parts of the surrounding area of the neighborhood. The vast majority of the buildings and the Palestinian houses were partially or totally destroyed and devastated by the chronic Israeli airstrikes and attacks that reach everything in that area.
U.S. decision to build a temporary port off Gaza's Mediterranean coast is a misleading measure aimed at buying time for the Israeli regime. This, according to Deputy Secretary General of Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Mohammed Al-Hindi. He said construction of the port could lead to displacement of even more Palestinians. Hindi added those who want to send aid to Gaza should open the territory's crossings instead of proposing to establish a port. He stressed the U.S. administration has been a partner in Israeli genocide in Gaza from day one by providing the regime with weapons without congressional permission. Hindi stressed apparent disagreements between the U.S. and Israel are not genuine and are only related to their tactics. He said Israel seeks to separate north of Gaza from its south with American cover and reduce its area by creating a buffer zone. And earlier, we asked co-founder of Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, about her take on the U.S. plan to build a so-called humanitarian aid port in Gaza. Here's what she had to say.
My thoughts that this is just a charade for the United States to act as if it cares about the civilians in Gaza when it has been for 6 months supporting the Israeli genocide and refusing to put the pressure that's needed on Israel to open not only the Rafah crossing, but also the other border crossings in that between Israel and Gaza. So it is ridiculous for the U.S. to send in all of these military people to build a, quote, temporary port. I mean, we know Gaza has needed a port for a long time, not a temporary port, a real port under the control of the people of Gaza, just like it needs an airport, which it had until the Israelis bombed it. So this is all a charade that the people in Gaza see right through and understand that this is not because the United States is their friend.
Meanwhile, leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Israel is incurring significant losses in terms of military personnel in Gaza and Lebanon, and its army is worn out and tired on all fronts.
Israeli soldiers, this is a very tired army, and let us just see that they are exhausted. That it's not just to say that there's, of course, there's hunger in Gaza, there's destruction of homes, the structures of buildings. This is just one part, but there's another part as well. The numbers of Israeli soldiers killed or wounded is a huge number, and there is a unity that the numbers are much higher than what the Israeli army is actually announcing. Some are saying three times, some saying four times the number. Let's take an example.
Speaking in a televised address, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah noted Israel is covering up its military losses and experiencing a severe shortage of soldiers, where the regime resorted to recruiting thousands of people, even from the ultra-Orthodox community. Nasrallah said in the Northern Front regime's imposing strict censorship on information about losses in terms of soldiers, military vehicles, and other assets. The Hezbollah leader noted the senior Israeli experts and former ministers have admitted to strategic and economic losses the regime is suffering. Nasrallah also commented on U.S. support for the regime, urging Washington to halt Israeli aggression instead of helping it. And regarding the conflict in Gaza, Nasrallah said the regime has lost the war as it's failed to achieve any of its declared objectives, including the eradication of Hamas. A UN investigation has found Reuters reporter who died in southern Lebanon last October was killed by Israeli tank fire at a group of clearly identifiable journalists. Probe says that UN personnel did not record any exchange of fire across the Lebanese southern border for more than 40 minutes before Israeli Merkava tank opened fire, shelling wounded six other journalists. One of them later had to have a leg amputated. Some investigative reports have reached a similar conclusion prior to the UN probe. Rights groups called the incident a deliberate attack on media workers, saying it amounts to a war crime on the part of the Israeli forces. According to Palestinian media, regimes killed more than 130 journalists and media workers since its genocidal war on Gaza started last October. Hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters in San Francisco have held a rally demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They also called for an end to U.S. military support for Israel, blocking the international terminal of San Francisco International Airport. Footage from the scene shows protesters carrying banners with messages such as "permanent ceasefire now" and "stop arming Israel." Protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza have taken place in many U.S. cities in recent months, including New York City and Los Angeles, and even outside the White House in Washington, D.C. Large protests were also held ahead of President Joe Biden's State of the Union address and the Oscars. Pro-Palestine demonstrators have regularly interrupted Biden's campaign events and speeches. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's carried out a fresh drone strike on an Israeli target deep inside occupied Palestinian territories. The Iraqi Resistance said that a new attack hit strategic Palmachin air base in the central part of occupied land. Islamic Resistance in Iraq vowed to continue and double anti-Israel operations during the holy month of Ramadan in support of Gazans and in response to Israeli genocide. Since last October, the group has carried out numerous attacks against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. It's also attacked American military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for U.S. complicity in the Gaza genocide. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says what is happening in Gaza is an indication of Palestinian steadfastness and resilience. He made the comment while meeting with a group of Quran reciters and memorizers in the Iranian capital. Saman Kujuri takes us there.
An annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader. But this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza, who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, China, and Russia have kicked off the main phase of joint maritime exercises in the Iranian territorial waters located in north of the Sea of Oman. In the first phase of the drills, the different units from the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and Islamic Revolution Guard Corps Navy, along with naval forces from Russia and China, conducted different types of maritime exercises.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation. The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
During the holy month of Ramadan, Muslims in Afghanistan not only observe fasting, but also practice a spiritual act of helping others, particularly by distributing food to the less fortunate. Abdullah Amirzadeh reports out of Kabul.
The holy month of Ramadan, revered as the most sacred month in the Islamic calendar, is a period during which Muslims observe a daily fast from dawn to dusk. This fast is not merely about abstaining from food and drink. It is also a time for spiritual reflection, prayer, and doing good deeds. Maulavi Niazi says it is a time to do business with God.
The holy month of Ramadan is the best of the months. It is said in the Quran that this month is better than 1,000 months. This is a month to do business with God by giving charity, doing good deeds, praying and reciting Quran. We Muslims should seize the opportunity of this holy month and get united with our brothers and, of course, pay serious attention to the poor and to the less fortunate.
Ramadan is not just about fasting, but also a time for giving to those in need. The fast is broken each day with the evening meal called iftar. Muslims here in Kabul provide food and distribute it to the people in need at the sunset for iftar, a tradition that continues throughout the holy month.
Here, as you can see, we prepare and distribute food to needy people. This is a tradition every Ramadan in this mosque because Ramadan is the month of the Feast of the Lord. It is a month to take care of the poor. Generous people raise funds for this purpose. It goes on throughout the month with approximately 900 people being fed every iftar.
The act of providing food to the poor and needy is seen as a way to purify one's wealth and is an important part of the spiritual practice of the holy month of Ramadan.
During Ramadan, Muslims unite in a journey of spiritual growth. This holy month, marked by charity and communal meals, illuminates the essence of humanity and brotherhood. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Thirty ayahs and 30 days. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating the Quranic teachings First of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavenly duty. So, the ulama, that is the Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the second episode of Ramadan special series, we are going to explain Ayah 172 of Surah Baqarah of the Noble Quran. This ayah speaks about eating pure bounties and thankfulness towards Allah, the creator of all bounties. Stay tuned, please. Ramadan is an endless bounty which we are obligated to thank God for it. To be thankful of Allah for this great bounty, we should get proper recognition of it. It has been narrated from the Prophet that should the faithful know the merit and greatness of the blessed month of Ramadan, they would wish the whole year were Ramadan. Prophet Muhammad also said that Ramadan is the month in which we are invited to Allah's banquet. Let us think over this statement. Aren't we using Allah's bounties every moment? Aren't we Allah's guest throughout our life? Is it not Allah who has created the entire universe? So, the blessed month of Ramadan should be a very special period, and God has invited us to a very special banquet. According to the Prophet, we are the guests of Allah, but it is quite clear that not everybody deserves to enter the banquet to be Allah's guest. He who steps in this divine banquet tries to provide the grounds for gaining the divine bounties and gifts. Therefore, this great bounty has to be thanked greatly. The Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, had you known what is there for you in the month of Ramadan, you would have increased thanksgiving to Allah. The Noble Quran has recommended the faithful in many ayahs to benefit from the divine bounties while emphasizing on thanksgiving to Allah. Real thanksgiving is to be a submissive servant for God. As it was said today, we are going to touch upon Ayah 172 of Surah Baqarah, which reads, O you who have faith, eat of the good things we have provided you, and thank Allah if it is Him that you worship. Human beings should be in remembrance of God from the moment that He wakes up till night and thank God for the bounties he benefits on that day. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says in Sermon 193 of Nahjul Balagha, while describing a God-weary person, he starts his night with thanksgiving and his morning with remembrance of Allah. God has mentioned the properties of the faithful in many parts of the Quran. Forgetting of these properties will deal a fatal blow to the faithful and their society. Ingratitude and neglecting of bounties are what Satan suggests and tempts. When God expelled Satan from paradise, he saw that he would sit on the way of humans till the day of judgment and would tempt them for their fronts, behind, right, and left. But Allah told him that he would be given respite till a specific time, which according to some exegetes of the Noble Quran is the day of uprising of the Savior of mankind, Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. Now, the point to note here is that Satan swore to Allah that Allah would not fund most of human beings thankful. Ayahs 5 and 6 of Surah Ibrahim of the Noble Quran also read, "Uncertainly we sent Moses with our signs. Bring your people out from darkness into light, and remind them of Allah's days. There are indeed signs in that for every patient and grateful. And when Moses said to his people, 'Remember Allah's blessing upon you when he delivered you from Pharaoh's clan, who inflicted a terrible torment on you, and slaughtered your sons, and spared your women,' and in that there was a great test from your Lord." It is noteworthy that it is only the insightful people who taste the sweetness of thanksgiving. There are those who have not caused their soul and mind to sleep. Some people enjoy bounties, but they are not satisfied and happy. As it is often said, they see only the empty half of the glass. They have a negative look at the world and events. Most of us are heedful of health only in the time of disease. When there is drought, we complain and are concerned. If we are told that we are healthy, we say, "So what? It is natural." When we have ample rainfall and snowfall in winter, we say, "So what? It is natural." Winter is the season of rain and snow. The point is to be thankful all the time. Instead of saying that it is natural, we should say, "Thank Allah." One way for thanksgiving is to enlist our bounties. Enlisting and mentioning of bounties will give us a good feeling and help us pass behind crises in life. God says in Ayah 26 of Surah Anfal, "And remember when you were few, abased in the land, and feared lest the people should despoil you, and he gave you refuge, and strengthened you with his help, and provided you with all the good things, so that you may give thanks." God also says in part of Ayah 7 of Surah Ibrahim, "If you are grateful, I will surely enhance you." This is a divine promise, and Allah will never break his promise. We Iranians have felt this promise several times. 40 years ago, we were involved with Iraq, which was supported by at least 45 countries, led by the US. In those days, we were not able to make even a hand grenade. This, while today, the Islamic Republic of Iran is the 9th country which is able to make satellite and launcher. In the present Iranian year, we have sent 3 satellites to the orbit with a satellite carrier indigenously manufactured by Iranian scientists and experts. One of the senior managers in the field says, "Iran was the 43rd country among the club of satellite owners. We started our activities with India, but with the meddling of the Zionist regime, the cooperation failed and India left. Then we cooperated with Russia. It was a cooperation full of humility. At this time, when we wished to only see a satellite closely, Russians showed the satellite model from a distance of a few meters, fearing that we might find out the fabric and structure of their satellite. If we ask Russians as when we would be able to make satellites, we would hear the answer, 'You won't be able to make it within the next 35 years. And even if you make it, you will not be able to launch it yourselves.' And We will not launch it for you under any circumstances. Yet we did it. We ourselves both made the satellite and launched it. I remember that after launching, the first ones to call and congratulate were the Russians. While their tone had changed with us and there was no trace of humiliation. Dear listeners, space know-how was not the only arena in which we Iranians saw the materialization of Allah's promise. Before the Islamic Revolution, Iran had no position among the highly cited articles in the world and was not even among the 50 nations in knowledge production. Today, however, the Islamic Republic of Iran ranks 15th in knowledge production. As for security too, Iran is the most secure country in West Asia and one of the most secure ones in the world. As in the field of production missiles, drones and various types of weapons and ammunition, also Iran is considered an advanced country. The last but not the least, the Islamic Republic is a pioneer in the region and an important country in the fields of nanotechnology, medicine, biotechnology, nuclear sciences, renewable energies, stem cells and so on. These have all been achieved through thanksgiving to God, the source of all bounties and blessings.
Food for thought.
Salam everybody, and may God accept your fasts. Here is a saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, to help us abstain from undesirable acts during blessed month of Ramadan that may nullify the fast. A fasting person is in a state of worship even when asleep in bed, except when backbiting a fellow Muslim.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. today's lesson, the invitation of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's an honor to be here at your service. Dear friends, we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan and how it is an invitation for every single one of us. Now, you know, again, one of the things that we have a tendency to do is not fully understand some of the practices that we do as a Muslim, or we don't understand some of the actions that we do, some of the commandments of the Almighty Allah, or perhaps we don't understand some of the ideological, theological, or jurisprudential, perhaps philosophical aspects of Islam. Now, that does not mean that Islam itself has some kind of a flaw or deficiency. In reality, it means that we are deficient and we don't have the appropriate amount of knowledge to be able to understand these things. Otherwise, these things are all based upon pure knowledge and wisdom. So, you know, one of the things that we don't understand, again, is the holy month of Ramadan. 29, 30 days, depending upon the sighting of the moon, you know, we are fasting from the time of Fajr until the time of Maghrib. You know, we kind of just leave it at that. We don't really bother to kind of delve a little deeper, get some more insight on to what exactly is going on in the holy month of Ramadan. And so when we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan, first and foremost, we need to understand that we are a guest. We are being invited to this great divine feast. And who is the one who is inviting us to this great divine feast? Well, it is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the creator of the universe, the ultimate supreme master and king, and the one who is in control of the cosmos and the universe and life and death. Such an entity is inviting us to be his guest in the holy month of Ramadan.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about how we are invited in the holy month of Ramadan as the guests of the Almighty Allah. So, you know, what we're trying to do, of course, in order to, you know, understand this Islamic lifestyle, because fasting and the holy month of Ramadan is an integral and pivotal and central aspect in our Islamic lifestyle. And you know, this holy month of Ramadan, alhamdulillah, it comes every single year, and we have the opportunity every single year to be able to witness the holy month of Ramadan, to fast in the holy month of Ramadan, to worship in the holy month of Ramadan, and to gain nearness in the holy month of Ramadan. So we were saying in the previous segment, of course, that we are the guests of the Almighty Allah, and that it is the Almighty Allah who has put forth this beautiful invitation to the Muslims and to all of humanity, really, if humanity had the awareness to be able to take benefit and take advantage of these blessings. The Almighty Allah is not at all stingy when it comes to rewarding human beings for their good actions, whether Muslims or non-Muslims. Of course, a Muslim has a much higher level of understanding, and in return, they have a much higher level of reward. But still, what we're saying is that Allah will reward everybody their due reward based upon compassion and mercy and justice and knowledge and wisdom. And so we are being invited in this holy month of Ramadan to this great feast. Our perception needs to be along these lines. We need to view the holy month of Ramadan as an integral part of our Islamic lifestyle and as an invitation to the feast of the great and almighty Allah. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will focus on Netanyahu's threats to attack Rafah and the possibility of military action there regarding the political issues and the captives. This is while the occupation regime has announced the release of two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation. In addition, there are ongoing contacts to conclude an exchange deal, as well as protests and demands to overthrow Netanyahu's administration to hold early elections. Regarding these topics, I welcome the specialist in Israeli Affairs, Professor Ali Haider. Welcome to Israel Watch, dear Professor. So, after the occupation army announced the release of two captives in Rafah during a complex military operation, as they put it, the Zionists began advertising that we can address the issue of the captives without negotiations. But this event will not have a major impact on this issue. The impact of the release of the two captives on the issue of the entire captives have laid the groundwork for those who oppose the captives exchange deal to take advantage of this event and escalate their opposition. Professor Ali Haider, how do you assess the release of the two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation that was prepared for a long time, knowing that the two captives were in the possession of a Palestinian family, not Hamas, according to Osama Hamdan, the former senior representative of Hamas in Lebanon?
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. In fact, Netanyahu needed such an achievement to justify his positions of refusing to submit to the demands of the Hamas movement in the negotiations in order to continue the genocide. However, the event, in its circumstances and the number of captives, does not change anything from the overall scene. Rather, we can say that it'll be just a passing event. For 2 or 3 days, the world will forget this achievement because 134 captives are still held by the Hamas movement. And therefore, Netanyahu is looking for such tactical events here and there in order to influence public opinion and create for himself a solid foundation to continue the war. This war, in addition to its strategic dimensions, also favors Netanyahu personally. He needs this war to stay in power.
Professor Ali Haider, between the impact of the recent captives release operation and the captives exchange deal, how do you evaluate the Zionist approach regarding the captives?
There, the division still exists at the political level and at the popular level as well, to the point that for the first time in opinion polls, 51% of the Israeli population now supports an exchange deal, even if it comes at the expense of a ceasefire. This is a shift in public opinion that portends what Netanyahu fears. It heralds more transformations because protests are escalating among the families of the captives. All of this is due to the failure to achieve the goals declared so far, not only a failure with regard to eliminating the Hamas movement, which the United States has also begun to say is impossible, but also even at the level of liberating the captives. These could be serious achievements before the eyes of the public, but they have not happened so far.
Here it means that after more than 4 months, Netanyahu has been able to release only two captives, and his attempts have failed on previous occasions.
Yes, the two captives were not held by Hamas. There is news out there, but it needs to be verified. There are talks about a deal with those holding the captives and so on. These things are being said, but I want to emphasize that it is just a passing event whose impact is fleeting and does not change anything in the political scene. The problem is with Netanyahu. No matter how much he tries to find temporary solutions, the effects are not enough to bring stability for his administration.
Indeed, the protest against the way Netanyahu and members of his administration have dealt with the captives at the hands of the resistance in Gaza are escalating day after day. Demands have grown from an exchange deal to overthrowing Netanyahu's administration and holding early elections. Rarely does a session of the Zionist administration pass at the present time without disagreements, divisions, and tensions amongst its members over the management of this aggression against Gaza and the captives exchange deal that is being negotiated. In the last session, there was a rebuke from Netanyahu to ministers in Likud who did not oppose Hamas's terms for the exchange deal. Netanyahu's government is on its way to disintegration. If a deal is concluded for the exchange of the captives with the resistance, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will withdraw from it. And if it is not concluded, Gantz and Eisenkot will withdraw from it. In both cases, the administration will disintegrate. I mean, according to the Zionist analyst, if the exchange deal is concluded or not, the Netanyahu administration is on the path to disintegration. Opinion polls say that 55% of Israelis want to go to early elections.
In fact, demanding early elections is what Netanyahu fears the most. And everything he does in security and politics is in order to avoid this scenario. But the administration structure may impose on him what he does not want and what is not in his interest. Here, I would like to refer to the significant point which was mentioned a moment ago. The Israeli captives have become hostages of Israeli policy and the internal disputes within the administration. This is because it is not in Netanyahu's interest to push for this deal and put it on the negotiating table with his administration members. This will fire up the situation between the two parties. Therefore, we can say that Netanyahu is keen not to appear as someone who is opposed to the deal, but rather wants the opposition to come from the ministers, whether from his party or from outside his party, so that he is not facing the captives' families. This has greatly affected his public standing in this field.
And the occupation's decision to launch an attack on Rafah. The Hebrew media have revealed the plan of the occupation army for the attack, starting with the evacuation of the displaced either to the northern Gaza Strip or to Khan Yunis. The matter is related to negotiations for the captives' exchange deal. The decision to attack Rafah was taken around 2 weeks ago, and the occupation army is waiting for this political decision to be taken and the Egyptians fear large displacement operations to its lands. Mr. Ali Haider, the decision to attack Rafah was taken 2 weeks ago, and the Egyptians do not oppose, but they only fear the displacement problems. What do you think?
Unfortunately, the conditions of some Arab countries have become such that the root of the Israeli attack on the Palestinians is not revealed or exposed, but rather it is reflected on them in a direct sense. And this is unfortunate. This is what dares the Israelis to commit massacres and launch attacks. Regarding this area, however, it is possible to talk about more than one point. The Rafah issue is no longer a field issue par excellence, but it has become an interactive issue that is overlapping and interacting with two other problems, which are the issue of negotiations over the captives and the issue of tensions within the administration. Given that the issue of field pressure through Rafah is the political goal of its timing now, it is linked to the captives' negotiations to pressure Hamas to make a concession. Therefore, the more negotiations falter from the Israeli and even American perspective, the more pressure will be needed through Rafah. It seems that there is an indication of a solution if we might seek some kind of freeze in the field to one degree or another in this area. Therefore, we are facing an issue that has become more complex due to its interactions with other issues. This is in addition to the American position, which has become clear that it is not against the operation, and rather we need a different plan in one sense. And also regarding the Egyptians' concerns, we're facing a multi-dimensional event intertwined with more than one local and regional aspect.
I mean, it is very complicated. The recent contact between President Biden and the head of the Zionist regime, Netanyahu, regarding the attack on Rafah and the captives' exchange deal, these issues caught the attention of the Israeli media, which have detailed some of what was revealed.
Mr. Ali Haider, did Netanyahu obtain Biden's approval regarding the attack on Rafah?
First, there was certainly no serious American opposition. Second, there was perhaps a disagreement about some details and not the origin of the Israeli attack. Third, this position is not denied by the United States, but rather it has become public that we're not against the military operation in Rafah, but rather we need a reliable parallel plan, in a sense, to protect, as they say, the civilians. It has become clear to everyone that protecting civilians means more casualties. This American hypocrisy is therefore a matter of tension. These are provocative expressions with which they want to fool the Arab world and Arab public opinion. Unfortunately, I think more than 30,000 martyrs and more than 60,000 wounded should be enough to expose this hypocrisy. However, we do not actually need these numbers in order to know the truth.
Professor Ali Haider, specialist in Israeli affairs, thank you very much for your participation in this episode of Israel Watch, and thank you for your good follow-up. Take care.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Palestinians abducted by Israeli regime forces since the start of the war are returning to Gaza with harrowing accounts of mock executions, constant beatings, and humiliating mistreatment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinian men kidnapped by Israeli regime forces since the start of the war in Gaza have told Middle East Eye how they were physically tortured with dogs and electricity, subjected to mock executions, and held in humiliating and degrading conditions. In testimonies to MEE, one man who was taken by Israeli regime forces from a school in Gaza, where he had sought refuge with his family, described how he had been handcuffed, blindfolded, and detained in a metal cage for 42 days. During interrogations, he said he had been given electric shocks, as well as scratched and bitten by army dogs. Other men also described being electrocuted, attacked by dogs, doused with cold water, denied food and water, deprived of sleep, and subjected to constant loud music. One of the men, Moaz Mohammad Khamis Mehrdad, who was taken prisoner in Gaza City in December and held for more than 30 days, said, "They did not spare anyone. There were 40-year-old boys and 80-year-old men." as well as three men taken prisoner in Gaza, M.E. spoke to a man abducted in a raid in the West Bank city of Qalqilia, who said he had been blindfolded, stripped naked, and hung by his arms during interrogations in which he was repeatedly beaten and burnt with cigarettes. He also described being held for days in freezing conditions in which he was not allowed to sleep and of a troop urinating in a bottle and handing it to him after he had requested water. All four men described being forced to strip naked and being constantly beaten and abused by Israeli regime troops during their weeks-long detentions. MEE has also spoken to a number of other former detainees who also described similar experiences to those of the men in this story. Their accounts of torture and abuse follow similar allegations made by human rights monitors. The Zionist regime's conduct of its war against the resistance group Hamas in Gaza is already the subject of an International Court of Justice case in which it stands accused of genocide and ongoing war crimes investigation by the International Criminal Court. Last week, details of an unpublished investigation by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, alleging abuse of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners detained during the war in Gaza were reported by the New York Times. Many of those details appear consistent with the testimonies of former detainees who spoke to Middle East Eye. Recently, Haaretz reported that at least 27 detainees from Gaza had died in Israeli regime military facilities since the start of the war. It said some of the deaths had occurred at the Sedeh Tayman military base in southern Israel and on a Anatot base in the West Bank. Recently, Alice Jill Edwards, the UN's special rapporteur on torture, said she was investigating allegations of torture and mistreatment of Palestinian detainees by the Zionist regime and was in talks with the Israeli regime authorities to visit the country on a fact-finding mission. Rami Abdo, the chair of EuroMed Human Rights Monitor, which has also compiled reports of torture in custody, said the testimonies of Palestinians released from Israeli regime detention were deeply disturbing. Abdo told MEE, "These testimonies reveal a systematic pattern of abuse, including forced strip searches, harassment, threats of rape, severe beatings, dog attacks, and denial of necessities such as food, water, and access to restroom facilities. These acts not only inflict physical pain, but also leave lasting psychological scars on the victims. The use of such brutal tactics, particularly against vulnerable groups such as women, children, and the elderly, is reprehensible and constitutes a gross violation of human dignity and international law." Miriam Azem, an advocacy associate at Adala, a Palestinian human rights organization, said reports of pervasive torture and ill-treatment inflicted on Palestinian detainees in Israeli regime custody demanded an immediate international intervention. Azem told MEE, "Hundreds of Palestinians from Gaza remain held incommunicado, their whereabouts unknown. The urgency of the current moment demands not just attention, but immediate and resolute intervention from international community. Any failure to intervene poses a grave threat to Palestinian lives." The Zionist regime army had not responded to MEE's request for comment at the time of publication. It has said in response to allegations concerning the mistreatment of detainees that such conduct violates IDF values and contravenes IDF orders and is therefore absolutely prohibited. It has said it's true.